Butters is on the board. Butters, how you doing, brother?
You know, we're all
that is not the sound of confidence.
we're doing good. We're doing good.
Yeah. We're glad you're with us, man. Thanks so much for being here.
Glad to be here.
Yeah. The boom has got to have some time off once in a while. Take those chillins to the beach. So he and the lovely McQueen are at the beach, and we look forward to having them back. And right now, Butters will be with us this week. So, yeah. Say welcome to Butters on the text line if you want to. In the meantime, we got a great show laid on for you. 3 o'clock today, my good friend, former State Senator Brian Taylor, who is now running to take the position as Chief Justice for the Alabama Supreme Court. He will be on the air with us at 3 o'clock talking about some recent decisions that have been made and others that are in the works right now. Great stuff happening in the legal world. So, yeah, former State Senator and Chief Justice candidate Brian Taylor, 3 o'clock. And then our friend Jeff Poor, editor-in-chief of the 1819 News, as well as the host of the Jeff Poor Show down in Mobile, he'll be on at 3:30 talking about some of what happened in D.C. over the weekend. We'll unlock some of the machinations of politics in D.C., spending bill, what got funded, what didn't. Is Kevin McCarthy going to lose his job? We'll talk about it. That's 3:30 with Jeff Poor. And then I've got a whole triple dipper, so sound effect Butters, hit it.
The triple dipper, three stories you've got to know.
That's right, the triple dipper, three stories, three themes, if you will, that you got to know as we run today's show. Number one, right out the gate, I'm calling it the win column. What's in the win column? There's been some legal stuff happening, and we're going to have that in conjunction with our conversation with Brian Taylor, but there's other several cases around the nation that you got to know are ongoing that I think are moving towards the win column and could have a dramatic impact on where conservatives stand in the legal picture. So, yeah, number one, the win column. Number two, I'm calling it spend it like you got it. Well, that's where we are right now. They're spending it as if they've got it in D.C. Another spending bill, because they can't seem to pass a budget. So a continuing resolution passed over the weekend, and yeah, we'll talk about it. They've got 47 days to figure it out till they have to do it again. Spend it like you got it. That's number two. And then number three, I'm calling it just not right. I mean, you look at some of the public policy decisions that are made around the nation, and there are times when I find myself getting frustrated with state politics in Alabama. And other times, though, I have to recognize what's happening in other places and just say, man, praise God I live in Alabama. But we'll talk about it because there's places right now where the people of those states need to be looking around and going, this is just not right. And it's not. So I'll cover that for you in number three on the Triple Dipper. All right, let me move to my comments for the day. And I will tell you once again, proud to have Southern Immediate Care. Southern Immediate Care, a chain of clinics that covers the northern half of the state, as the sponsor of the Right Side Way monologue. Southern Immediate Care, with locations in places like Gadsden and Atala and Anniston and five locations around the Birmingham area, open 7 days a week. And I'm just going to encourage you to check them out. Southern Immediate Care, sponsor of the Right Side Way. So let me jump in here. The other day on the show, I mentioned cults. Cults are different from people who simply believe something. Cults are very different from mainstream religious faiths as well. Cults are known for having extremist views that don't line up with culture, and they often clash with societal norms. Cults are also often only a small number of people, and their practices are viewed sometimes as slavish or strange or even sinister. And there have been some wing-ding cults over the years, man. I mean, think of things like Jonestown in Guyana, where a group of Americans went down there, followers of a self-styled Messiah, a former Christian pastor, who got them all to drink poison Kool-Aid in a mass suicide. Cults are also known to lash out at other people outside of their beliefs, like the doomsday cult in Japan known as the Aum Shinrikyo that perpetrated five separate sarin gas attacks on subways around Japan in 1995, killed over a dozen, wounded thousands. And then even weirder was the 1998 mass suicide of 39 men and women in a mansion in San Diego. All of them were found lying in their beds wearing identical clothes because their leader had convinced them that suicide would allow them to leave their earthly, quote, bodily containers, as he called them, and enter an alien spacecraft that was hidden behind the Hale-Bopp comet. I mean, just wow. I had my own experience with some cult followers in 1978. I was 13 years old, living with my dad in London, England. He was stationed there on an army assignment. In the summer of 78, we arranged for me to fly home to visit family. 13 years old, flying by myself across international date lines. Well, at one point, my final layover, it came to Atlanta's Hartsfield International Airport. It was back in the days when you had paper maps and had to follow signs. And there I was, probably looking lost as a coot, walking around by myself in this giant airport trying to find my next gate. And all of a sudden, someone grabbed my arm. And I turned to find this girl wearing these strange blue flowing robes standing behind a wooden barricade with several other hippies in robes. And there was actually a sign on the wooden barricade that said something to the effect of, quote, "This is a religious group not endorsed by the airport authority." Okay. It turns out this was a thing back in the day. Cults were panhandling in the airports because they knew that travelers often had pocket money and they'd pay a few bucks to be left alone while they were catching their next flight. So this girl had me by the arm and started off by asking if she could help me find my gate. And I said, sure. And I told her where I was trying to go. She said something like, "Oh, you're headed in the right direction, but can you give me a few more minutes?" All right. Well, before it was over, this 13-year-old, me, had given the Hare Krishnas a $10 bill and gotten a hardback book of all their favorite beliefs. It was maddening. But y'all, cults are not normal. Cults are not faithful people simply trying to find enlightenment. Cultish behavior loses sight of acceptable norms that society lives by. Cultish behavior finds non-believers of their strange ways to be somehow beneath them and sometimes in their way. Well, in my opinion, there are several of what I would refer to as cultural cults that we're dealing with in American society right now. Belief systems that are so extreme that they do not bear semblance to reasonable thought. And they are, quote, cultural because their goal is to try and transform our whole culture to meet their untested and often dangerous views. And they are cults because they are fanatics, plain and simple. Let me label these three cultural cults for you. There's the cult of climate change. There's the cult of transgenderism. And there's the cult of the education establishment. Think about it. Name me another group of avid adherents to a dogma that are doing more to reshape our culture than any one of these three. And they do it blindly. And they don't care who they have to crush or what they have to do. It's their belief system or nothing at all, and they will stop at nothing at all to convert an unwilling society to their agendas. The cult of climate change is the most well-funded of them all. The highest ranks of government are under their spell, so much so that we are watching as literally trillions of our tax dollars are being spent to pursue their aims. They have large gatherings in places like Davos, Switzerland, where they congratulate themselves on their efforts while also setting the next level of actions necessary to transform our economies. They will change your car, your refrigerator, your air conditioning unit. They'll dictate how much water you can fill your toilet bowl with. They will tell you you must lower your carbon footprint while they fly on their personal jets to their next summit. Trees must be planted to promote environmental equity, if you know what that is. Even if it means, by the way, that a farmer is going to lose their livelihood because they can't use top-grade fertilizers anymore. They will make cows wear diapers to control bovine flatulence while millions are spent learning to grow fake meat in the laboratory to spare the world from methane-producing cattle farms. And to add to their ranks, the Biden administration has announced the establishment of the Climate Conservation Corps, much like the Peace Corps. It'll be a government-funded group of followers of the cult of climate change. Well, there's one. How about the second one, the cult of transgenderism? Y'all, is there anything more paganistic than a group who sets themselves up in a godlike fashion to tell you they can magically change from one gender to another, or for that matter, have none at all? But they are not content to merely call themselves gods with the power over gender. They must have sacrifices. And in true Old Testament fashion, the cult of transgenderism is willing to commit child sacrifice, putting children under the knife or injecting them with chemicals, all designed to alter their appearance to conform to the cult's views. But not just their children. They want your children. You see, you have no right in the cult of transgenderism to raise up your child in the way they should go. No, that's their job. Because as self-proclaimed gods, they know better. The cult of transgenderism is openly evil. And then lastly, there's the cult of the education establishment. They will openly say they know what's best in the education of your child because they went to an educational institution led by other adherents to their cultish views. They will deny that parents should have any say over their child's education. They will view critique of the poor results of their work as an attack, and they will lash out, even to the extent of reporting concerned parents to the FBI to have them investigated as domestic terrorists. They will fail, and they'll tell you that's normal. They will allow radical beliefs to be introduced in the schools and tell you you don't understand. Y'all, this is not rational behavior. This is a slavish adherence to a flailing dogma. It's the cult of the education establishment. Now, y'all, that's three cults, three cultural cults. And the only way to deal with a cult is to confront them. You see, cults are blind in their pursuits. It takes open confrontation to cause them to even blink in the light of a new day. But you have to first see them for what they are. Climate change screechers, transgenderists, and educrats, they are members of their respective cults, and they don't care who they have to crush to get their way. But knowing who and what they are, y'all, that's the first step to winning. And this is a fight that we have to win. And that's a wrap for the Right Side Way. Well, there you have it, the Right Side Way of the day. And I'm just going to tell you, the reality is this. As you look at where we are in society, these are what I would call cultural cults. And they don't care what you believe. What matters is whether you will bend to what they believe. And they will do anything and everything to get their way. It's not normal. It's not rational. And it's not right. Phil Williams, y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Yeah, making it cool to be a conservative. Hey, the text lines are open, 833-687-4448. That's 833-68-RIGHT. Text it in, call it in, same number. Several of y'all have already figured out we're open, so let's see. Brandy from Athens sent, Brandy, I don't know what you're asking me. Brandy says, what the blank happened this week? Brandy, what are you mad about? I don't know what's happening. So, Brandy, follow up and tell me to what I should be concerned about with your angst. Jason from Meridianville says, today is Monday and exactly 1 week to go before my wife's scheduled C-section. We welcome our little baby boy, just getting really excited. Jason from Meridianville, blessings on you and yours. God bless that child to be born beautiful and healthy and strong and fit and free from any harm or injury or illness or infirmity. In Jesus' name, amen. Get her done. Keep us posted. Skip from Tony says, Phil, amen to every word. That was music to my ears. Thank you, brother. John from Huntsville. Phil, awesome monologue. Also, my prediction was right when I said McQueen was not going to be leading the pick'em contest. Oh, I got to look and see. I forgot. Okay, John, now that you said that, now I got to look and see what the results were. But I'm pretty sure, John, that I am... You say I moved up a couple of spots, but I'm pretty sure it was like only a couple. But John, just so you know, War Eagle. There you go. Raven from Russellville says, I grew up on a farm. Let me tell you, you haven't lived. You've always been walking around behind a mule, plowing under the Alabama sun, had that mule who's been eating wild onions right in your face. He says, that's living. It's called the cult of being self-sufficient. All right, fair enough. The college pick'ems, if I can get to it, am I in? Am I showing mine? I am not. I gotta log back in. So I'll do that during the next break. But John from Huntsville, tell me where you are, because if McQueen's dropped down, that means John from Huntsville might have moved up. We'll see. All right. For those of y'all that don't know, we do have Boomer set it up for us. We have the NCAA college pick'em, and it comes out with a series of games for us to choose from, and then we see how we do. And it's been going pretty good for Boomer McQueen and John. For me, not so much.
That's what I've heard.
Well, what do you mean that's what you've heard?
Watching the show. I keep up.
Is this like a social media phenomenon? Look how Badville's doing this week.
Maybe something on the dark web. I don't know.
Hey, I got to ask a question for you.
Okay.
All right. So this is important. Important business. If you were to imagine that a product was going to spend 5 years doing research and then roll out something with a grand announcement that they say their customers have been asking for quite some time, can you quickly tell me what you imagine it might be? Just off the top of your head. What product, pray tell, would it be? I'll save you the trouble. It's apparently a big, big deal that Charmin's new Ultrasoft has a brand new scalloped terrible edge feature so that when you pull it off, you get a cleaner scalloped edge and you don't have like little tails of toilet paper tearing.
Well, I'm glad they finally rolled that out.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. No pun intended. I'm pretty sure that's like one that's going to change society as we know it. I'm going to also hazard that is absolutely probably one of the biggest examples of the fact that we live in the first world than anything I've heard in recent months. I mean, just
I'm with you. Yeah. Now I will make a plug. There are certain things you don't skimp on. Good toilet paper is one of those things. Having lived the military life.
Bro, listen, I'm going to tell you, care packages from home included toilet paper. Thank you very much.
Oh, yeah.
And when you had your own roll, you took it back and forth with you to the latrine.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
And nobody asked to borrow a square. It's a big deal. But I just don't think that our society has been clamoring for 5 years worth of research to figure out how to come up with a scalloped edge perforation tear. I
guess you got to be innovative. You're right. So how do you innovate toilet paper?
In 5 years, was it a government contract? What? I mean, that's the only thing I can imagine. Is it, software developed probably, by the government?
Probably government funded research.
Probably. And somebody was making bank by just finding a new reason to say, well, we're going to have to renew that contract because we haven't quite got the perforations down yet. Anyway, all right, look, we got a great show laid on. We're going to jump into the dippers here in a minute. And the win column is where I'm going next. Going to be digging into some legalities. Y'all, what I'm loving right now is that conservatives have more and more been figuring out how to crack the code that too often progressives have been dealing with us on for years. And that's making sure that the court system, that other branch of government, the judicial branch, that maybe, just maybe, it might help conservatives once in a while. Well, there's a few out there right now. I'll tell you about them. The win column. Y'all stay tuned. Right Side Radio, we will be right back. Hey, all you Right Side ruffians out there, you are listening to Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right.
Hey,
And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. I'm talking about covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. That would be this one. That would be Alabama. And I mean to say, this show sends its signal like, whoa, way down south of Birmingham and up north of Huntsville and Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, Mississippi, all thrown in just for good measure. Look at the text line real quick. I would just jump over here and affirm what I anticipated to be the answer. John from Huntsville is in first place on our pick'em. And by his own admission, he says, I'm in first place. I just didn't want to brag. But thank you, John. But we appreciate you. And you obviously have been the pick'em king as you have clawed your way to first place. Andrew from Tony. I don't know the answer to your question, Andrew. I will look back at that later. Mark from Red Bay says, I'm sure that new toilet paper is better than using a corn cob. Well, I would anticipate that to be true. And I don't know why corn cobs were ever a thing. In fact, I would dare say they weren't. In fact, I would dare say that's just, yeah.
Ouch.
Just saying. All right, let's leave that behind and go straight to the dipper. So the win column. So y'all, the pushback has begun. So there are great organizations out there. You've heard about my friends from the Alabama Center for Law and Liberty. There are other organizations on a broader scale like Alliance Defending Freedom, like the Pacific Legal Foundation. You've got other groups out there that are conservative who are doing great conservative things and fighting for conservative values. And when I say that, I'm talking about things like your constitutional liberties. You know, the rights that we as citizens actually should enjoy, but too often get encroached upon by liberal progressive policies. You've got the rights to the freedom of religion, your faith, the very idea that there are churches that were shut down during the COVID pandemic and people were arrested for actually going to church. I mean, those kind of things are antithetical to who we are as a nation. And we finally have begun to really, in my opinion, crack the code effectively and move the court systems in favor of traditional and conservative values. Now, a part of that, I have to say, is because President Trump, if there's anything that Mitch McConnell did right, and I get grumpy about Mitch McConnell. I do believe it's time for him to retire. Like, I think it's past time for him to retire. But if there's one thing that I got to give props to him for is while Trump was president, McConnell was pushing through his judicial confirmations. And the federal district court bench is an incredibly powerful place. People always think of the Supreme Court. And, of course, Trump was able to remake the Supreme Court by having the opportunity for appointments that got confirmed. And, oh, man, do you remember the battles? I mean, Brett Kavanaugh. I mean, just think about it. Amy Coney Barrett, I mean, the court is now standing in a position, and it has done some great things. The Roe v. Wade Dobbs decision came out last year. We've had great decisions on Second Amendment and First Amendment issues. We have a court right now that is finally leaning conservative. But the federal district court level is, I've often heard it said, as an attorney, I can just tell you, I've heard it said before, the federal district court level, which is the lowest level of the federal courts, the federal district court level is the most powerful court. The most powerful person in the world, some would say, is a federal district court judge because they are appointed for life for good cause. So they're there. They're not worried about re-election. They're not worried about, you know, anything like that. They're in. Once they're confirmed, they're in for life or good cause. And a federal district court judge is the only one who can tell the president of the United States what to do. Think about it. Everything above them is an appeal of what they did. So yeah, the Supreme Court of the United States is the ultimate arbiter of the law of the land, right? The appellate courts, like the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals or wherever, are certainly the first level of appellate activity in the courts. But they are only dealing with what happened at the federal district court level. And we're seeing some stuff happening right now in federal district courts that are just fun to watch. Just fun to watch. And then on top of that, we're also seeing organizations like I mentioned earlier that are conservative in nature, and they are out there fighting the good fight, y'all. In fact, if you found yourself thinking, huh, I need to find a place to do some charitable giving at the end of the year, you might want to consider whether or not there are organizations like I just mentioned that are fighting for conservative values in court, because most of them are nonprofit. And I'm just going to tell you, that's a great place to put your money. If you've already given to your church, and tithe is first, but if you've already given to your church and you're just looking for an opportunity to gift on top of that, then let me suggest to you that some of these organizations like Alliance Defending Freedom and Pacific Legal Foundation and some of the others, they are doing an amazing amount of work to fight for what you and I need them to fight for. Here's an example of things that are starting to turn the tide. How about woke DA Alvin Bragg up in New York? You know him. Story here on townhall.com came out yesterday. Woke DA Alvin Bragg is finally getting a taste of his own medicine, according to the article here on Town Hall. You remember last year we had the bodega clerk, the older guy who was just minding his business, working his little bodega in New York, in Manhattan, and a guy named Jose Alba, and a guy named Austin Simon, a thug, came in, and his girlfriend wanted a bag of chips and didn't have money to pay for it. Well, point number one, you can't have it because you didn't bring the money. But when Jose Alba resisted and said, you can't buy that because you don't have enough money, what did Austin Simon do? Came behind the counter, started beating up the old man. The old man in self-defense had to pull a knife out as he's getting beaten up by this guy, stabbed him, and the guy died. He did. Well, it was self-defense. It was all on video, and Alvin Bragg brought charges. Second-degree murder, despite the fact that it was a clear case of self-defense. Those charges were later dropped. Alvin Bragg is now being sued, and rightfully so. So, yeah, Alba is having an attorney. He's taken the liberal DA who has been raking law and order over the coals in Manhattan, indicting Trump on some of the worst, most novel theories of law that anybody has ever seen brought to bear. And, yeah, get a little taste of his own medicine. How about this one, though? The Southern Poverty Law Center, based right here in Alabama. The SPLC is the organization that continually tries to brand conservative groups as hate groups. Brand them as hate groups because, you know, every once in a while they are, like the KKK. But they're also branding groups like the Family Resource Council and Alliance Defending Freedom, the one I mentioned a moment ago, and Moms for Liberty. They're being named as hate groups by the SPLC. The SPLC has also wormed its way into being used as a resource by mainstream media and even by the FBI and the IRS. And so when the IRS or the FBI or NBC News sees a list that says hate groups, Moms for Liberty, what does it do? They start talking about you that way because, well, you know, we got our information from the Southern Poverty Law Center, and they're a much respected and vaunted organization based out of Montgomery, Alabama, and they should know. Well, no, they shouldn't. They're a sham group that makes a whole lot of money by putting out these lists. Well, they're being sued right now for defamation. Well, they've been sued for defamation, I mean, how many times? And yet the defamation suits never quite stick. They often get thrown out because the threshold for the burden of proof in a defamation suit is usually too high. Except now we have a new one that didn't get thrown out. Pray tell, what is happening? Could it possibly be that the SPLC is going to have to defend itself in court? It appears they are. A guy named D.A. King, he's the founder and president of the Dustin Inman Society. He brought a case against the SPLC that branded his organization as a hate group, calling his organization anti-immigrant, saying that they focus on vilifying all immigrants. Never mind the fact that they have legal immigrants on their board now, and never mind the fact that in 2011, the SPLC had said they were not a hate group. So in 2011, they were not a hate group. Pray tell, what happened? 2018 came up, and all of a sudden, they're on the map. Except that the evidence that the SPLC says they relied upon was pre-2011. What does that mean? It means the burden of proof may have just been met, because what you have to do is you have to show that there is a basically a knowledge that what is being espoused is not true, and it's being espoused anyway with a reckless disregard for the truth. And so for the first time, we have a case brewing that could go into the win column against the SPLC. We'll see how that goes. Listen, I'm going to switch over, and I'm going to move into what's happening with the Supreme Court. We're going to take a break right now. We'll come right back. Keep in mind, too, top of the hour, we got my buddy Brian Taylor, who is running to be the next Chief Justice for the Alabama Supreme Court, to break down a court decision about transgender therapies on kids. It's big doings, y'all. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right, making common sense a superpower. Looking over the text line real quick so I don't get behind, Frank from Huntsville says, the way the media and Biden talk about conservatives, you think everyone's a hate group. MAGA Republicans, like that's bad because we want America to be a good place for all of us. I agree. I mean, I've thought before, does Biden not recognize that MAGA means make America great again? That's pretty simple. And then Raven Russellville assuring me that corn cobs in the outhouse were a thing. And I'm not even going to go into the details he sends. And then Roger from Ardmore confirms corn cobs. And then I'm not even going to go into his details. Why are people feeling that, I guess because I talked about toilet paper, now I need to know what happens with corn cobs.
Look, you start a Monday with poop. I mean, it's just, you kind of set yourself up for that
it's
one.
It's like I'm back in youth pastor days. That's all we talked about was Jesus and poop. That's, you know, back and forth.
How many of those texters are all men?
There's a lot of women in there.
Are they talking about corn cobs?
I'm just moving on now, bro. I'm moving on. All right. Hey, listen. This is awful. So, by the way, I'm changing the subject. I'm getting serious now. So John from Huntsville texting in, and I'm watching to see if there's going to be a breaking news story, but it says just heard on the news that North Dakota Senator Doug Larson and his wife and two children were tragically killed in a Utah plane crash. Did not know that. That is awful, and our hearts go out to the family if that's true. We'll watch for it, so we are. Thanks, John. Appreciate you. Let me jump back into the dipper. So here's the thing. There are some things you got to know that are out there, and then there's a couple things that are already in the win column. So legally speaking is where we are right now. I'm talking about the legal wins and the legal fights that we've got going on. I call this part of the triple dipper the win column. Well, here's some things you want to see in the win column. So the Supreme Court, you remember, they go in terms. And the Supreme Court decides what it will take up. It can literally decide not to hear a case. And if that happens, you're just stuck with whatever the lower courts decided. But when they do agree to hear a case, then you have to wonder, are they going to hear oral arguments on it or just take it up on briefs? But they're taking up some cases right now that could have some dramatic impacts on life as we know it. So one of them is coming up as a First Amendment case. They did agree to take this case up. The case comes out of Florida and Texas. It's a joint issue case. The case is called Lenke versus Freed. What basically boils down to is, can a tech company censor what you say online? And that's the issue. Florida and Texas both passed laws against viewpoint censorship. A company called NetChoice, which is a trade association of tech companies, argued that they should be allowed to restrict and moderate content on platforms. The Biden administration, go figure, has urged the Supreme Court to overturn the laws in Florida and Texas. And the justices are now going to hear this case on October 31st regarding whether or not, sure enough, this could be going on. The other one you're going to have to watch is a case involving whether or not an elected official is allowed to block you on their social media. Now, having been an elected official, I can tell you there's some wingdings out there who will get on your page and say anything. And they will get on your page and they will call you all kinds of things because you dared to exercise your right to vote your conscience. And I mean, the teachers union and the rabid pro-abortionists, they were the worst. They'd get on my social media and they would just say whatever they wanted to say. And the truth be told, sometimes they're profane. And anyway, the bottom line is this. The question before the court is, when a public official blocks you online, has that become an official action of the government? I think the question is going to hinge on whether it was their personal page or whether it was their elected official page. If it's their official page, I think they're in trouble, unless they're going to say that it was profanity or it was, you know, describing things that were harmful. It's going to be interesting to watch. Here's the other one, gun rights. Gun rights are up again. This is a weird case, man. I got to look at it and go, this is a very weird case. This case is called U.S. versus Rahimi. This guy, Zaki Rahimi, he's not a model citizen at all. In fact, he's been the subject of domestic violence restraining orders related to firearms. He's been arrested multiple times for discharging his firearm in public for, you know, harmful reasons, to include, like, firing shots in the air when his friend's credit card was declined at Whataburger. I mean, this guy's a nut. The thing is, they stripped him of his Second Amendment rights under civil law, not criminal law. So then the question becomes, was it a due process violation? Y'all, I'm telling you, the fact that they're taking this case up is because the justices want to deal with it. And it's going to be interesting to watch. And then the last one is taxes. So how about inheritance tax? How about money? Like, what about when you receive something because, you know, Aunt Zelda passed away? Well, right now, the Biden administration is intent upon trying to tax things that could exist. This case coming up right now, called Moore versus United States, considers whether or not the government should ever be allowed to tax income before it's ever even received. I mean, it's sitting out there and you've never touched it, and they want to tax it. Notionally speaking, it's wrong. Lastly, I'll tell you before we hit the top of the hour and go to our conversation with Brian Taylor on the same type stuff, is this. The NRA had a major victory. You know, last year they won that victory against the state of New York in the Bruin case. And it's a big deal, y'all. Got even bigger this week because, story here on Fox News dated this morning, a judge in New York just ordered the state of New York to pay $500,000 in legal fees to the National Rifle Association for having to defend the case, which they ultimately won. I'm going to tell you right now, courts don't often do that. My experience is, more often than not, the courts like to go ahead and say, order as entered, taxes cost as, or cost taxed as paid, which is their way of fancy way of saying, and whatever you paid your attorneys, you're out that much. Nope. In this case, they came back and said, hey, New York, by the way, the NRA was right. You were jacked up. So how about you pay them $500,000? That's righteous, y'all. That is extremely righteous. All right, we're going to come right back. There's been a major decision handed down on Tennessee law related to whether or not transgender therapies on kids is allowed to take place. Or how about this, transgender surgeries? Mutilating kids, should that be a thing? Well, the courts have spoken in regards to a recent law passed by the state of Tennessee, much like Alabama's. And it's going to be interesting to see how this goes. So yeah, I'm just telling you, Brian Taylor is going to call in. He's been talking about this. It's big doings. And it's the kind of thing that we need to keep track of, because Alabama, we kind of led the way on this. Tennessee, proud of you for being there with us. And Tennessee has got a major ruling, story out on Daily Wire, and we'll talk about it with Brian Taylor. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. you right side ruffians out there, you are listening to Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right.
You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national, sometimes the international, covering down on all of it. Like the dude just said, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Well, welcome to hour number two. So I've been in this first part of the Triple Dipper that I'm calling the win column. It's because there has been some recent court rulings, some at the federal district court level, some at the appellate level, some at the Supreme Court in terms of what they're taking up to consider, that I find to be legally in the win column for conservatism. Well, one of those decisions came down just in the last few days. You may recall that Alabama led the way and passed what's known as the VCAP law, the Vulnerable Child, I forgot what all it stands for, but the bottom line is it's the law that does not allow for transgender therapies and surgeries on kids. And the Vulnerable Child Compassion and Protection Act, the VCAP law of Alabama, immediately went to court. Well, Tennessee passed their own. And what we want to see is congruity among the courts. And what we're starting to see is that the courts are saying, you know what, legislature, you did your thing. Well, a recent decision came down in the Tennessee law in the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals. And I called my friend Brian Taylor to see if he wanted to come on and break it down with me. By the way, Brian Taylor has been on the show before. I will tell you this. He's got an incredible resume, a former Army JAG with service in Iraq. He is also an attorney who became a chief advisor for former Governor Riley and then later on an advisor to Governor Ivey. He also served with me in the Alabama State Senate. So without further ado, the guy who is now running to be Chief Justice of the Alabama Supreme Court, Brian Taylor, how you doing, man?
Hey, I'm doing great, Phil. It's good to talk to you again today.
Well, absolutely. I appreciate you making some time. Hey, so this Sixth Circuit ruling, it kind of looks like Alabama and Tennessee's laws are being upheld as we go. What do you think?
Well, you know, this is it's a testament to what, you know, many are saying is a new trend or a trend back to conservative principles and judicial philosophy in the federal courts. You have the Sixth Circuit now echoing what the 11th Circuit said last month, which is, look, if it's not expressly in the Constitution, we're not going to let you strike down a law based on a policy argument. Policy is to be left to the state legislatures where you can elect your representatives to change the law, pass laws, and the courts are really showing a newfound respect for that. And I think that's largely connected to recent jurisprudence out of the U.S. Supreme Court returning these issues to the states.
Yeah, I would agree. And I look at this, too, and I also appreciate the fact, I think we've had like 19 states that have passed laws regarding transgender treatments of minors. And I'm hoping what we're seeing is that the federal district court levels are beginning to find, and I called it congruity a minute ago, but your bottom line is you want to see them be along the same lines. But sooner or later, this is going to wind up being a SCOTUS issue, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, you know, I think I think you're starting to see how progressive interests, activists, have really conflated issues to make laws, and this goes back decades, this goes back to Roe v. Wade, to make laws seem unconstitutional when they're not. And that was the argument in this case, Phil, as you know, and in the case in Alabama as well, the argument was that somehow a law banning gender-affirming surgeries for minors was unconstitutional because it discriminated on the basis of sex, or it discriminated on the basis of gender.
Yeah.
And in reality, as our own Judge Andrew Brasher on the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals. He's a former Solicitor General for the state of Alabama for the Attorney General's office. He now sits on the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals. He was quoted by the 6th Circuit in this case, making the point that this isn't discrimination at all. The law applies equally to both males and females. It doesn't matter what sex or gender you are. That the law says parents cannot artificially seek to change the sex of their children with these procedures that are ethically questionable, and there's just no guarantee in the Constitution. And so the courts are finally saying, you know, look, you can't just come to court and say you think something's not right. You can't just come to court and say you don't think it's fair. You've got to come to court and argue the law. And there's nothing in the Constitution, the court said, that guarantees parents the right to these surgeries and this so-called gender-affirming care. And one more point, Phil, I think it's interesting. The success that the left seems to have with using these euphemisms like gender-affirming. This isn't affirming anyone's gender.
Yeah.
It's seeking a discord in somebody's gender with from their birth sex. And so, they try to get this done in the courts. The left tries to get this done in the courts. And I think that the Sixth Circuit decision is very well written. Anybody that has a chance to ought to read it today. The 11th Circuit decision back in August was equally well written, especially Judge Brasher's opinion in that case. So,
well, and I look at this too, and what I enjoyed, the Sixth Circuit, they didn't mince words. This was not a soft sell or just an order that did not have, you know, their sentiments attached to it. They got out there on this thing. I mean, at one point they even dealt with the issue that the ACLU, which was one of the lead, you know, opponents to the law, was arguing that the trans community is somehow politically powerless and being unfairly treated. And the court dealt with that directly and said, you've got every major law firm, the federal government, and most medical organizations all pandering to your side. You are not at all marginalized. And I thought, that's a smackdown.
They did. They said it very strongly. They took apart the arguments point by point by point. And it's just, you know, it's a symptom of what's going on in larger society, which is there's so much fear out there of being politically incorrect. And the reason there's fear is because the left will accuse you of evil if you just speak the truth. I mean, if you say, look, we know what a man is. We know what a woman is. There's nothing evil. And 5 years ago, that was stating a fact that nobody questioned.
Yeah.
But now they're out there calling. So I think what you've been seeing is, you know, you have individual judges that are hearing these cases. They don't want to be called bigots. They don't want to be called intolerant. They don't want to be called insensitive. And so they have been inclined in the past to find things in the Constitution that may not really be there. And so finally, the Sixth Circuit in this very strong case just said, look, you know, there's no constitutional right to commit genital mutilation on your children. I mean, if the democratic process makes that illegal, that's fine. The Constitution doesn't speak to it. So, you know, go back to the legislature if you disagree with that. But the courts are not the right venue for it.
Yeah, and you used the term politically correct a minute ago. And what we always hope, though, is that the courts will not find themselves trying to be politically correct. They'll stay with being legally correct. And I think that's what the Sixth Circuit strove to do here. I tell you what else I like, though, too, Brian. And you're a stronger legal mind than I am, but the reality is, I love the fact that the Sixth Circuit decision in this Tennessee law for kids was it rode the common sense fine line too. I mean, it didn't just talk like pure legalese. It came down to things like, well, that makes no sense, and they would say things like, the ACLU tried to argue that transgender status is somewhat akin to having a certain skin color and discrimination there too. And the Sixth Circuit observed that, well, you can't say that because you change what gender is every single day. And I thought that was awesome.
Well, it was a very, I don't know if I should say this, but they put the hay down where the goats can get to it, which is a way of saying any of us can understand it. And that's important for courts to do. I think in many cases, the courts, you remember from law school, Phil, when the courts kind of gave this expansive reading to privacy rights, and the Supreme Court talked about the penumbras and emanations of the Constitution. That was a very fancy way of saying, hey, even though something may not be written in the Constitution, we'll find it there. Nobody really knew what that meant, but it led to many years and many cases of just this expansive reading that allowed judicial activism to take hold. And so now you've got these judges writing in very plain English. And that's a trend now, by the way. Justice Scalia and a professor you've probably heard of, Brian Gardner, wrote a book together about the importance of writing in plain English. The laws govern our daily lives. We should all be able to understand them. We should be able to understand court cases. The media should be, these journalists that cover these cases who aren't lawyers ought to be able to write what the cases decide without having to go to law school. So I think you're exactly right. It's helpful when the courts do that.
Yeah, it is. All right, ma'am. Hey, listen, speaking of someone who rules with common sense, so you've been a legal advisor to two governors. You have also been a maker of the laws in the state legislature. You're now running for the opportunity to be the next Chief Justice of the Alabama Supreme Court. Tell folks where they can find out more about you and what your campaign's doing.
Yeah, thanks for having me on again, Phil. And anybody who's interested, I'm a conservative. I feel strongly about my conservative judicial philosophy, and hope folks will go to my website to check it out. It's briantaylor.com. That's Brian with a Y, briantaylor.com. And you can email me there, call me, and happy to answer any questions I get.
All right, man. We appreciate you. Thanks for weighing in.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. See you, bud. All right. Well, there you have it. That was another one in the win column, and it's worth it. It is worth it to know that one. Because, first of all, what I love is when states who are border states are kind of aligned, and if you will, and they have to act on their own legislative actions. They have to take their own part in the overall picture. But I love it when things happen like Alabama passed their law, the VCAP law, the one that says you cannot, you know, alter a kid forever through therapies and surgeries simply to posit your agenda. And then Tennessee passed theirs too. Alabama's is being upheld by the courts. It's still in court, but it's allowing to be put into effect. Tennessee just got a major victory in theirs. And by the way, we're not alone. Those two states, we're not the only ones out there doing this. And I'm proud to see that people are standing up and putting some legal matters in the win column for conservative and common sense principles. All right, listen, we're going to take a break right now. We'll come back from this break, and we'll jump on in to the next one. I'm calling it Spend It Like You Got It. I guess you heard the government didn't shut down. Well, at the bottom of the hour, our buddy Jeff Poore is going to call in, and we'll talk politics in D.C. and how you spend it like you got it. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We'll be right back.
I mean, every time we have one of these impasses and the brinksmanship is like hyped up by the national media, and we've been talking about this, every member of Congress, oh, we're really worried about this, but we always like seem to figure out something. Either the government shuts down for a day or two or a week or two at most, but things generally get to where we are right now and no one's really happy, but there's either a CR or there's something else. Nothing ever changes here. And you know, the only way this changes, and I think I'm not like, I don't know that this is necessarily the time for a guy like Matt Gaetz to really try to push this, but it's going to take a prolonged shutdown to get back to normal business. Because as long as they are able to put lawmakers' backs up against the wall and use this as leverage, like saying, hey, if you don't pay, if you don't pass something, we're not gonna be able to pay the troops. Why do you hate the troops? So it's gonna take something like that to get things changed back. And they can say this all they want. I know I'm going a little long here, but every time, we're gonna lose in the media. The media, you're gonna blame it. You're gonna lose in the media no matter what if you're a conservative. This is why not just bite the bullet and figure this out the right way to do it?
This is absolutely true. And I look at it too, and I don't know though that I recall the last time we had barely a month of a CR. I mean, usually they pass them for, 90 days to 120 days or whatever else. They gave themselves just over a month. So we're right back here. I mean, before Thanksgiving, we're right back here again, facing a Thanksgiving holiday, potential shutdown, Congress up against the wall. They all want to go home for the holidays, and next thing you know, Ukraine, southern border, same machinations, same, bat time, same bat channel. Sooner or later, we're going to, you mentioned the word business a minute ago. What we're seeing right now, the public doesn't often realize, is not the regular order of business. This is setting aside the regular order of business and doing something that is janky, if you will. And that's where we are right now.
Well, and they've done this probably not in recent history. It's been since Obama and Boehner that they've done these little short-term CRs trying to get somewhere. But that's typically what it is, Senator, when the Republicans controlled one house of one branch and you had Obama in the White House. That was the last time we saw these little small stop gaps. And I just remember watching the government on the brink of a shutdown on New Year's Eve on like one of my TVs is like the ABC New Year's special. And on the other is a last minute bill being passed by the U.S. Senate or something, and it's always something of that nature. But that's what we've come to expect when you have, I think, a Democrat in the White House. And usually it's the Senate that was under control of Democrats. And then it was Harry Reid. So I don't know. I'm not saying that this is normal, but historically this is something that we've had to endure over and over again. And it just doesn't end. We know how this movie ends. Maybe they do another continuing resolution, or they just miraculously get enough Democrats and Republicans to kind of put something together no one really likes, but it gets the job done.
And dude, you just mentioned Harry Reid and set me almost like having flashbacks. I'd forgotten about Harry Reid almost. But hey, let me ask you this though: in the middle of it all, there was the subfight, I would call it, the subfights over southern border funding and Ukraine funding. Your thoughts on everything and everybody tying their wishes and hearts to those two issues?
It makes you wonder why you just want to get a clean budget. Why tie these hot button issues to this, right? So why make it so hard to pass when you have these two very, very polarizing things, the southern border and Ukraine? For both conservatives and liberals, I don't know why liberals are open borders, but pro-Ukraine war all of a sudden is a very peculiar place on the spectrum here. But to get something done, just to keep the government open, let's put these things aside and we'll get that done. But that's not the motivation here. You and I well know that it's all part of this posturing and grandstanding and kind of showmanship of what our federal politics are.
All right, so speaking of showmanship and grandstanding, the question has arisen about trying to remove Speaker Kevin McCarthy from his position as Speaker. And I look at that and I think, well, the posturing and the grandstanding is on both sides. Matt Gaetz is out front right now saying he intends to bring the motion to vacate the chair, which is a fancy word for remove the Speaker. They did it with John Boehner. But at the same time, other folks look at it and go, why? Speaker McCarthy says it's a personal thing between he and Gaetz. Gaetz says he thinks he's got the support of the Freedom Caucus. The Freedom Caucus is really not speaking up on this issue. Your thoughts? I mean, what do you think? Is McCarthy at risk right now? What's the deal?
Probably. It's not a comfortable place to be. And look, when McCarthy's having to, fend off his own troops in his caucus, it makes it harder for him to fundraise. I think if we're handicapping this, you and I would say he's probably going to survive, but it's not a sure bet. Yeah. It's not like a lot of these guys who are Speaker. Nancy Pelosi never, ever would have let this happen. And here's the thing about Pelosi. compared to McCarthy. Pelosi had a small margin last Congress, and she still held on to it. It's just that, and this is even with AOC and the squad kind of operating as the Freedom Caucus on the left, but I just McCarthy made probably too many deals at the beginning, and now they're coming back to haunt him.
Yeah, I would agree. I think he probably will survive, but I think that what we're looking at right now is he can't afford to lose many. So if Marjorie Taylor Greene and Matt Gaetz and a few others decide to withhold their support, he's got to get some Democrats on board. He's got that narrow of a margin. You know, nobody knows what's going to happen with that guy Santos in New York, so I think he's around for a little bit longer. But, you know, if you lose anybody in the coming weeks, if somebody, you know, gets hit by a bus, I mean, bottom line is McCarthy's looking for Democrat support. And if Hakeem Jeffries decides he wants to play ball, he can go in there and say, yeah, but not without a deal. And that's what will happen. You know it will.
I kind of wonder, though, like, what if McCarthy says no to Hakeem Jeffries and doesn't do a deal? It's not like Jeffries is going to be the speaker, right? Really, we're just without a speaker. If they do a motion to vacate, the Democrats go along with it, and then inevitably somebody will be speaker. Why not? Why wouldn't it be Kevin McCarthy? He's probably as, you know, who else on the Republican side?
Yeah.
Is even interested in this position. Well,
that was my next question for you. So who would be the heir apparent? Who would be the one who would then make the power play and say, put me in and McCarthy out? I don't know who it would be. I mean, Jim Jordan has said before he doesn't want it. I don't think Jim Jordan's out there trying to oust McCarthy right now that I've seen. Who else has got that level of clout and chutzpah among the caucus?
Well, you got to look at – you got to look at leadership. Probably not Scalise. He's got health problems. I think Elise Stefanik is playing the Veep stake. She's probably not interested. She's third. And then Gary Palmer's not going to be – he's fourth. The one I hear every now and then is a guy, he's the majority whip, Tom Emmer from Minnesota. You're probably like, who? But he
what
is
good
the,
thing can come from Minnesota?
Well, he's the whip, and you know that he has the institutional knowledge probably to go wheel and deal. He's been around a long time. I keep an eye on him, maybe, because it's not going to be like a Jim Jordan or a Byron Donald. It's not going to be anybody like that. It's going to be somebody that is just kind of a functionary that's an institution or part of the institution. You know, the days of us having these ideological figures like Newt Gingrich, they just don't come along that often in that speaker's role. And I think that's probably where this is headed, if not Kevin McCarthy.
Yeah, there were days when on the Democrat side you saw Tip O'Neill, and on the Republican side you saw Newt Gingrich, and the position of speaker was respected, at least to the degree that it may not be in their party, but there was still a level of sort of prestige and respect that attached to the title. And right now, it just seems like it's a slugfest every day because the margins have been so thin on whoever the speaker is. Like you said, Pelosi held on to it. I'm pretty sure that Pelosi had a special file on everybody, and they knew it. But nonetheless, go ahead.
The magic of Pelosi was this: she would raise money for her members. This is the same reason McConnell has held on as long as he has in Kentucky, because these are people who have won over the donor class, and they kind of distribute the wealth. So that gets you clout with your caucus. And I don't know, something's happened where McCarthy's not there, and he's allowed a Freedom caucus to really expand with its own fundraising abilities, with its own infrastructure. And you look at the Democrat side, AOC is a big fundraiser, but they never were able to really get that to catch on like the House Freedom Caucus has. And when you start seeing these splinters within, I mean, and the House of Representatives is a huge, huge body. But when you see these things gain numbers, this was bound to happen from the very beginning of the Freedom Caucus to where we are today.
That's why they don't want a state Freedom Caucus in the Alabama legislature, because they know
exactly
what will happen. All right, brother. Hey, appreciate you. Your insights as Minnesota? Really? Minnesota.
Tom Emmer. Watch that dude. Now, he's got some Never Trump baggage, but.
Oh, okay. All right. Hey, Jeff Poor from FM Talk 106.5, The Jeff Poor Show and 1819 News Editor-in-Chief. We appreciate you, man.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
All right, we'll see you. All right, listen, we're taking a break. We'll come right back, and I'll continue this thread for a bit longer here. We're in number two of today's Triple Dipper. Spend it like you got it. And I'm looking at Mike from Athens says, bring back Trey Gowdy. There you go. All right, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back.